This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to the basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
You're listening to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network. This is your host, Jason Staples. Today we got a two-part show. First part of the show, we're going to cover some of the takeaways from the Syracuse game, including the performance of the quarterbacks and freshman running back Jaquez Patrick. And then in the second part, we're going to talk about some myths about playing on the road and playing in bad weather. So let's go ahead and start segment one. We're going to look piece by piece at the Syracuse game and some of the things that we can take away from that. We'll take it sort of topic by topic, a little bit piecemeal here. We'll start with the obvious quarterback question. So in evaluating McGuire's performance from Saturday and trying to project that forward, the hard part to assess is how much of what we saw against Syracuse was a result of McGuire and McGuire playing better than expected, and how much was the result of playing against the Syracuse defense, and how much, you know, how much is that a combination? And when you do see it, you know, on tape, when you actually break this down a little bit, I do think it was a combination. I think he played better than I expected. He played toward the top end, toward the high end of what you expect from Sean McGuire. I mean, he had good protection and guys were running open and he was able to hit them. He was a little bit more on time than he's been in the past. And after he hit a couple long throws, he got comfortable. But I do think it's important to pump the brakes a little bit on the excitement at this point, because Syracuse is one of the worst defenses in the country at giving up big pass plays. One of the main reasons for that is they play a lot of quarters coverage or cover four, where there's four guys responsible for deep zones. And that's generally regarded as a fairly safe coverage. But if you send two guys vertical on one side, you take away any safety help from that corner. And Florida State is one of those programs that as soon as they see quarters coverage, they have an automatic alert. They have a lot of their pass plays, it's an automatic post alert, which means you're going to send a guy on a vertical release on the inside, and then that outside post is an automatic throw as long as they stay in quarters, because you're just going to assume your guy is going to be better than their guy. And you know, Syracuse does not have good athletes they've got good but not great athletes at that cornerback position, and they couldn't stay with Florida State's receivers on that. And you know, you had two immediate big throws on the post that were wide open because Florida State just ran by them. I mean, you look at coming into the game, Syracuse. I just looked this up. Syracuse is 116th in yards per attempt against the pass against FBS competition. And they were 102nd in 40-yard passes or more, passes that go 40 for a gain of 40-plus yards. They're 102nd in allowing those. So given that McGuire is a big arm and a guy who likes to throw that deep ball, looks for that deep ball, and that's the thing he does best, that's like the ideal matchup for him. I mean, you couldn't script a better defense for him to face. So And once he got a couple of those throws and hit him, you could see he started playing with a lot of confidence, and he made some good throws in other areas, particularly that corner route on the smash for the third touchdown to Travis Rudolph. It's a good throw, great catch. But at the same point, he missed some throws that make you wonder, that are concerning in the seams, on some curls and some intermediate type stuff that you've got to hit if you're going to beat a team like Clemson, where that over-the-top stuff is not just automatic. You're not just going to run right by Mackenzie Alexander and that secondary for Clemson. So, it was a positive. I think you could see a little bit of a spark, particularly because of the big plays, and it looked like they had some fun. But I'm pumping the brakes on my enthusiasm right now, partly because I know what's been happening in practice and generally speaking, things haven't looked like that in practice most of the season. And because I know that Syracuse was giving up a lot of those plays, particularly on post routes all year. I mean, that's what they gave LSU trouble and on run defense, But LSU broke that game open with several deep posts that they just couldn't defend. And you know, that's the book on Syracuse, and that's what McGuire happens to do really well.
Now, as for which guy I would actually start against Clemson, or the guy that I would that I expect to get the bulk of the time against Clemson, that's a little bit more complicated because, again, Fisher has been talking all week about whether or not Golson is quite there in terms of recovery from the concussion, and the early signs this week are that he was not yet fully ready in that regard, and in the view of the sports medicine staff and the coaching staff. So McGuire has taken the majority. He took the majority of the first team reps on Monday. So at this point, I think I'll put it this way. I think I'm kind of expecting right now that McGuire probably gets the start based on the health concerns and some of the other things. But don't be surprised if we see both quarterbacks in this game, particularly because of some of the things that Clemson's defense has some weaknesses on. I mean, the biggest weaknesses that Clemson has defensively are in the linebackers. The linebackers cannot run with Dalvin Cook in particular in underneath coverage. And that's something that Everett Golson has shown the ability to hit some of those routes on the underneath stuff. So the ability to basically, you remember the Miami game where Dalvin Cook had the little angle route, or the little crosser out of the backfield coming across the field and scored on it. That's the sort of thing that, again, they're gonna need to do that against Clemson to get him isolated against those linebackers. And at this point, it certainly looks like Cook is gonna play. From what I understand, he could have played against Syracuse. Had that been Clemson last week, he would have played against him. So, you know, he should be good to go for this week. And you get him isolated on those linebackers in that kind of situation, that's the biggest advantage Florida State's going to have. So throwing the football to Cook out of the backfield on some of those little on things that allow him to be able to allow Cook to be able to catch the football on the move and work in space against guys that just cannot move with him. That's where they have the edge. So. And they're not going to have the same amount of, they're not going to be able to just throw the football down the field and expect their wide receivers to win, you know, easily like they did against Syracuse. So there is less of an edge that less of a benefit that Sean McGuire can really give you in this game in that regard. So, you know, I think some of it is going to come down to where Golson is in terms of preparation, what he's able to do early in the week, but. One other thing that probably I think has to play into this is that they were pretty close to making the switch to Sean McGuire on a couple occasions earlier in the year, particularly in the Boston College week. As of Thursday, Boston College week, they were going to make the switch to Sean McGuire because of the fact that he'd been more consistent. They'd had some issues, particularly in 2-minute drill and some other things with Golson and not quite getting things the way that they wanted. But they stuck with Golson and they did this. That happened again a little bit later in the year where they very nearly made the switch, and McGuire had taken first team reps at different points because they were close to making that switch. So given that he came in and played the way that he did, even though it was a great matchup against Syracuse, it has to have the coaching staff thinking, you know, maybe it is time to make the switch. Maybe it is time to make the move and go ahead and give Sean a chance, particularly against a team that he's seen before and actually did have some success against, even though personally he didn't play all that well against Clemson last year. He knows what it's like to beat that team.
One other thing I should mention too, and this is actually maybe even a more important issue, since I'm not in practice and I don't know the whole dynamic, the other part of this is the leadership aspect from the quarterback position. You have to have, if you're Jimbo Fisher, you have to have your finger on the pulse of that of your team, and you have to know who they feel comfortable with. Does your team feel more comfortable? Do your wide receivers? Does your offensive line? Are they more comfortable and confident with Golson back there or with McGuire back there? And who do you feel is actually leading the team? Who do you feel the team feels best with? And I think that governs your decision as much or more than anything else. coming into this, because you're trying to go with the guy they feel most confident about themselves. And that's something I can't assess from my perspective, because that's inside. I mean, that has to be in the locker room, and that's something that Fisher, I'm sure, is going to be talking to some of the older some of the rest of the team leadership about, is who do you feel comfortable with right now? Where do you feel this goes? And I think that's something, you know, again, the team in some sense has to decide who's going to play quarterback. So that's the other side of it. And that's probably a more important side coming into this game.
That said, I wouldn't be startled to see them use both quarterbacks, like I said, in this game. And moving forward, I wouldn't be surprised to see them use both quarterbacks over the course of the rest of the year. Now, one place where I do think there was an obvious, just a massive difference that looks very good moving forward, is the play of Jacquez Patrick in that game against Syracuse. I mean, that Syracuse defense actually had some success on the ground against Leonard Fournette. They gave up a couple big plays in the second half, but by and large, they were able to bottle up LSU's running game for the most part, up until those couple big plays late. And Jacquez Patrick and the FSU run game basically had their way with that defense. That's a really good sign. And I do think moving forward, there's no doubt that we're going to see more of a two-headed monster at running back with both Cook and Patrick. That was the plan coming in, remember, into the season with Cook and Mario Pender. And then Mario Pender got hurt. And then the problem was they wanted to do that with Cook and Pender and then have Patrick getting some reps. But Pender got hurt, and Patrick was not living up to what he was needed to do in practice. Pender was out, and you would hope that the freshman at that point would take the opportunity and really step up the intensity, really do what was necessary to contribute at that point and show that he was reliable, to show that he was going to run hard. And he just didn't do that for the first few weeks of the year, didn't do that in camp. And, you know, the word that I was getting out of practice is that he was running like a scat back, and they were trying to get him to run like a big back. Cause, you know, son, you are not a scat back. You're not going to juke guys. You got to run hard. You can't run soft. And they weren't going to put him on the field until he started running hard and doing the things that actually differentiate him as a back. And, you know, making sure that he got the protections down and so on. That wasn't as big of a problem for him. But in this game, he did all that. In this game, he ran. I mean, the first couple carries, he tiptoed a little bit. But then you could see, like, the light bulb went on and he ran hard. And if that's what they're going to get out of him, then you can bet that he's going to pick up 10, 11, 12 carries to give Cook a little bit of a rest, because Fisher has always believed in rotating backs whenever possible, partly because it keeps him fresh and keeps him less likely to get hurt, partly for recruiting and telling guys, I'm not going to wear the tread off your tires before you get to the NFL. And partly because when you get a guy like Patrick that leans on the defense and thuds the defense, you know, for 10, 11, 12 carries, and then you put Cook back out there, the speed, it's all of a sudden you put things on double speed and he's running by people because the angles change. So running by him more. So I think we're going to see a healthy dose of Jacquez Patrick against Clemson, regardless of whether Dalvin Cook is healthy and plays, which I think he'll play. You're going to see Jacquez Patrick get carries now that he's shown that he's ready to play. Now, as for Alec Eberle and whether or not he's going to actually be the starter, in Monday's released expected participation chart, or whatever Florida State's calling it these days,
Ryan Hofeld was still the starter at the center position with Eberle backing him up. That said, Florida State has gone against that in the past. You know, they released that as a courtesy/troll job for the media. So, you know, as with anything that has to do with personnel with Jimbo Fisher, you have to take him with a grain of salt. He's always going to be honest about scheme stuff with you, but he will hedge and lie and, you know, do whatever it takes in terms of personnel. So that's one. I'm not sure what we're going to see with that. I thought he played well against Syracuse, but again, Syracuse in terms of their what they offered in that at that defensive tackle spot. was not quite at the level of, you know, what especially they played the week before against Georgia Tech, who has one of the best defensive tackles in not only in the conference, but in the country. So, you know, it's hard to know, but my guess again would be that if Hofeld is healthy and he's had some shoulder issues, if he's healthy, he's probably the guy, particularly given some of the snap issues that you saw in this game against Syracuse. But if he does have some issues, then you know, I think Eberle played well enough that they're comfortable with him going in.
And again, what we've seen in the early practices this week is that Eberle has actually been the guy dealing with the first team snaps or first team reps as often as not. So it's not clear that Hofeld is going to be ready for the Clemson game. So who knows at this point? But at any rate, I thought Eberle looked good enough that they can rely on him to some degree. And then you have another guy where in Terrence Smith, where they've been hoping that this would be the game he'd return. The question is really whether or not he's going to have the lateral movement that he needs to have to be effective. The problem is he had a high ankle sprain, and the high ankle sprain is different from a regular sprain. And it just those things usually take months to come back from, not weeks. And they're hopeful, but I don't know that they're, even if he does play, he's not going to be, you know, Terrence Smith that was out there before the Wake Forest game, which is sad because, I mean, he was playing at a very high level early in the season. And Florida State's linebackers have not been very good since. Now, in this second segment, I'm actually going to take a little bit more opportunity to address a couple misconceptions coming into this Clemson game. We're going to have our preview with the next episode this week, but there are a couple misconceptions coming in. Right now, it looks like it's going to be a rainy day, not a whole lot of wind there, and it's a 3:30 kickoff. So, been getting a lot of different stuff about the, you know, what I would call soft factors, you know, whether or not this, how much of an impact this stuff is going to have on the game. Particularly, you're getting this, well, you know, it's a 3:30 game instead of a night game. You know, how much of a difference does that make? And to be totally honest, and you know, oh, you know, Clemson is a really intimidating atmosphere. You know, is that going to be less intimidating at 3 o'clock than it would be at 8 o'clock? I mean, how much of a benefit is that? And when it comes down to it, I just don't think it really matters all that much.
When you get to this level, you hear people talking about the intimidation of a given place or whatnot. And I think a lot of people misunderstand the way that this stuff works for top level athletes. If you have players who are going to be intimidated in that kind of environment, you're already most likely going to lose. So, you know, I was on the field when they did the when they ran down the hill, you know, the last few times Florida State's played at Clemson, and it's a breathtaking environment. I mean, it's an unbelievable environment, one of the best environments in college football. Nobody does it like Clemson. I mean, it really is a great environment. It's incredibly loud, great stadium. But when I was standing there in 2013, I was standing next to Desmond Howard, and when the crowd was at full volume and they were getting ready to run down, I reached over and tapped Desmond and said, "Man, I can't imagine how great it would be to come in as a visitor here and cut the heart out of every one of these fans." And he looked at me and just kind of smiled and was like, and just nodded like, uh-huh. Because for me, as a competitor, there is nothing better than getting the chance to go on the road into a hostile environment like that and to revel in it and shut everybody up, cut their hearts out, walk out with their head on my spear as my trophy and know that I did it in their house. Like, to me, that's how the better players, the guys who have the mentality that you want, are going to react in that environment. So to me, you hear people talk about, oh, you know, the home field is so intimidating for the other team. You know, no, what's intimidating for the other team is when they have better players. So the one, and actually it's interesting in studies that have been done, the one difference that we actually do see in terms of performance with home field and away, you know where the difference actually is? It's not in yards per play so much. It's not in in all sorts of other things. You know where the primary difference actually is in home field and away? It's in the officiating. So home teams get a slight bump from officiating, so certain judgment calls will go the way of the home team as opposed to otherwise. And then the other bump in college football, which, you know, again, in other sports, it's officiating and more judgment calls. The other thing in college football is sometimes you have communication errors or something that will result in a false start or something like that because of the noise level or whatever. And that can be an advantage. But in terms of the intimidation or whatever, whether it's at night or whatever, yes, it's a better environment for the fans. Yes, it's cooler. But I don't think in this kind of big game, that's an advantage or a disadvantage for one team or another. And you saw the way that in the pregame, I mean, I didn't see this because I was there, but you know, you saw in the pregame, Jameis Winston and those other guys, they were excited to get the chance to go out and cut the hearts out of that crowd. That's what they wanted to do. And that's what they did. So if you've got those guys on your team, then it doesn't really matter where you're going to play. And you have a similar kind of mythology around rain. You know, so many people talk about rain as a great equalizer and rain, how much it's going to affect the passing game and all that. And, you know, I'm going to go ahead and anticipate what Jimbo Fisher is going to say later in the week, because he's right on this. I'm sure he's going to make this statement, because anybody who's played in the passing game knows that it's not really rain that makes all that big of a difference in terms of affecting the passing game. Rain is okay. In fact, a wet surface can actually benefit the passing game, because as a wide receiver, I know where I'm going. I know that I'm running six steps and I'm taking an out, and I can go ahead and prepare to make that cut as well as possible. I can, you know, if I'm double moving somebody, I can potentially set him up to slip a little bit more, because defensive backs have to respond. They have to react more to the wide receivers. So in that regard, sometimes a wet surface, a wet track, can actually benefit the offense, benefit the wide receivers, because the wide receivers in the offense are actually, they know where they're going, and they're able to use that to create bigger plays than you might see on a dry track where there's better traction for the people who are reacting. Now, that's not always true. Sometimes, you know, receivers end up feeling like they have to throttle down more or whatever to make their breaks, and so they telegraph their cuts a little bit more. So, you know, some that can equal it out, and at that point, it's a null. There's no advantage really to either side, because it takes longer for the DB to react, but the receiver takes longer to make the break, so it ends up being a wash. But certainly double moves and that sort of thing, you're going to get potentially more big plays in wet stuff than you will on a dry track. And yeah, the ball gets weighed down, the ball's heavier, you know, it's a little slicker, and so, you know, sometimes you might get a drop or, you know, something going through somebody's hand or something like that. So yeah, you do get that stuff to some degree, but it just doesn't impact the passing game with teams that have quarterbacks who can, you know, who have big enough hands to handle the football, which, you know, these guys do. It's just not going to affect things as much as people would expect in the passing game, and sometimes it's going to really help the offense. So that's less of a concern. Now, wind is a totally different ballgame. Wind like what they had at Wake Forest earlier this year. That kind of wind can really impact the passing game. It does, because especially, and it's not actually a headwind tailwind issue as much as crosswinds in particular. That stuff gets treacherous. It's much harder to throw the football when you've got to account for wind, particularly gusty winds, where, you know, you're throwing it and it may gust and it may knock it down or carry it or whatever. And actually, you know, in my experience, if you throw a good ball, throwing into the wind is easier. Because all you have to do is just cut the wind. I mean, you just put it in there and you cut it with, you know, by throwing a nice tight spiral. Whereas if you're going with the wind, the real issue is that the ball sails on you, and that then you can get in real trouble, because a ball that sails, particularly in that intermediate area, is going to get intercepted. So the wind is a real is when you look at weather stuff, don't pay quite as much attention to precipitation as to wind. And for this weekend, as of right now, I think it's supposed to be a 7 or 8 mile an hour wind, which, you know, if it rains and it looks like it's going to rain, I don't know that that's going to affect a whole lot unless there's a lot of wind. With these two teams, both teams run it okay. Florida State runs it better than Clemson, but both teams run it fine, and both teams have quarterbacks with big hands who can handle the football in the rain. I mean, Clemson already beat Notre Dame in a monsoon, and actually, I should put this caveat in there. When you're playing in essentially a tropical storm, like what you saw with the Clemson Notre Dame game, we're not talking about just wet. We're talking about, you know, just what looks like a monsoon where it's just coming down like crazy. That actually does have a negative effect on the offense, and it's not just in the passing game; it's across the board because you're addressing situation where the ball is slicker and you're going to get fumble problems. You're going to have ball handling issues across the board. And that's true in the zone read game. That's true in all sorts of things where you're handling the ball. That's just going to make for a sloppier game. It's going to benefit the defense in that regard. Now, again, Clemson was able to throw the football early in that game and get a couple big plays, in part because their wide receivers were able to make breaks and get on top of the defensive backs, even in that environment. But I do think, you know, that is where if it's not just rainy, but we're talking tropical storm type stuff, then, you know, that does affect things a little bit more. And again, you have when you have tropical storm type rain, you have wind together with it generally. But so, you know, you want to distinguish between between, you know, rain and monsoon and then, you know, tropical storm. Those things, they have a different kind of impact on the game. And in that regard, you can't always predict what team the weather may benefit. Either way, I think, you know, the team that wins up front is going to have the edge by and large in any game, not just in the rain or in dry or whatever. So, you know, that's the thing. Lines travel. You know, if you're better on the lines, that stuff travels. It's, you know, the other stuff, it's a little bit more variable, but if you're better on the lines, then you're going to have a chance to win any game you're in. Well, that's going to go ahead and do it for us. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Now, before we get out of here, just a reminder that you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples and, of course, Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio for the latest on FSU sports. Make sure to catch our coverage of the Clemson game at Knoll Digest as well, where we're going to have some things, particularly on the premium board. So subscribe and get some of the additional stuff that we're putting there. But also, make sure to catch our next podcast, which will preview the Clemson game in much more detail. And then we're going to have a little recruiting update later in the week, right before the game. So stick with us here on Seminole Sports Radio. This has been the Unconquered Podcast. I'm Jason Staples. Thanks for listening. I made this.